Ever get the feeling that some stories just get richer the more you dig? That's how I feel about Isaac, son of Abraham, father of Jacob and Esau.
Right.
We're diving into Genesis chapters 25 to 27,
Okay.
exploring his life. But trust me, this isn't just dusty history.
No.
It's about family drama, big promises, and what happens when a blessing, well, feels out of reach.
It's a good one.
What about this story grabs you from the get-go?
Well, what I find fascinating is that even before Isaac's sons are born, there's already this undercurrent of tension, you see.
Okay.
After Sarah's death, Abraham, he remarries Keturah and has more children.
Okay.
This really complicates things in terms of inheritance and God's covenant.
Okay, hold on. Let's break that down for our listener.
Yeah.
Why was the firstborn inheritance such a big deal back then?
Right.
It wasn't just about the cash, was it?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Imagine you're the firstborn son.
Okay.
You inherit a double portion of your father's wealth.
Right.
Yes. But also the responsibility of leading your family. It's like being a mini patriarch, carrying a direct connection to God's promises to your ancestors.
Wow.
It's a spiritual legacy.
Okay.
As much as a material one.
And we know those promises were huge.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Generation spanning, land granting, chosen people, kind of huge.
Absolutely.
No pressure for the firstborn, right?
Right. So picture Isaac, the sole heir of Abraham's wealth, his position, and the weight of those divine promises.
Wow.
Then he has twins, Esau and Jacob.
Okay.
But even before they're born, God's prophecy throws a curveball. The elder will serve the younger.
Talk about setting the stage for sibling rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me a bit of how throughout the Bible we see these younger sons stepping into the spotlight, Abel over Cain, David over his older brothers.
Right.
What do you think that says about how God operates, especially back then when the firstborn inheriting everything was just like the assumed order of things?
Like God was saying, you know, don't get too comfortable with the expect. This recurring theme of younger sons being favored, it isn't just a quirky detail.
Okay.
It challenges societal norms and highlights God's power to overturn human expectations.
Mm-hmm.
He's reminding everyone who's really in charge.
Right.
And boy, does that play out in a dramatic way with the story of the birthright stew, doesn't it?
Oh, man, that story, it's almost comical.
Right.
Picture this. You're starving, famished after a long day.
Yeah.
And someone offers you a delicious bowl of stew in exchange for, you know, your entire inheritance.
Yeah.
Would you take the deal?
Right.
I mean, I'm a fan of a good meal.
Sure.
But that's a lot to give up for a little instant gratification.
That's a big one, yeah.
But on a serious note, this isn't just about a hungry guy and a bad trade, is it? What else is going on beneath the surface here?
You hit the nail on the head.
Okay.
This scene is all about choices and values.
Okay.
Esau, impulsive and driven by his immediate hunger, embodies a very worldly perspective.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He's willing to sacrifice something incredibly valuable for a temporary fix.
It's almost like he's prioritizing his physical needs Yes. over his spiritual inheritance.
Exactly. Now, Jacob, even if his methods are questionable, clearly understands the long game, right?
Right.
He's playing chess while Esau's playing checkers.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob's thinking about inheritance, about legacy, and ultimately about God's promises.
Yeah.
It's fascinating how this seemingly simple story reveals such a profound clash of values.
And it makes you wonder, if someone was watching their lives unfold,
yeah,
knowing that prophecy, wouldn't yeah. they try to step in?
Right.
But years pass, and Isaac is about to give a final blessing, a huge deal back then.
Oh, yeah.
And Rebekah, Jacob's mother, actually helps him trick Isaac into blessing him instead of Esau.
Wow.
So not only are these two brothers at odds, but now their parents are picking sides.
Yeah.
Talk about a dysfunctional family dinner.
It's like something out of Shakespeare, isn't it?
Right.
This tangled web of family dynamics, prophecy, and deception.
Mm.
And what makes it even more intriguing is that Isaac, knowingly or not, is trying to go against God's prophecy by favoring Esau.
It's like he's trying to rewrite the script.
Yeah.
Trying to impose his will on a situation that's already been, you know, ordained.
Right.
Do you think he was maybe trying to make up for the whole stew incident, like felt some guilt about how things shook out?
It's certainly possible.
Yeah.
And it speaks to the very human tendency to try and control things.
Right.
Even when those things are beyond our control.
Yeah, I know.
But what's so striking about this whole episode is that even when the blessing is given under false pretenses.
Right.
It can't be taken back.
Wow.
It's as if once that word is spoken, it carries a weight. A permanence.
Right.
That just can't be undone.
So talk about consequences.
I know, right?
It's not like anyone gets away scot-free here.
No.
It seems like everyone pays a price for their actions.
Exactly. It's like the saying goes, be careful what you wish for, you just might get it. Isaac loses out on a close relationship with Jacob.
Yeah.
Rebecca has to send her favorite son away for his own safety.
Oh, wow.
And Esau is left grappling with, well, a potent cocktail of resentment and anger.
Oof, yeah.
This story really highlights how messy things can get when we try to force our own plans.
Right.
Instead of trusting in God's timing and plan.
Makes you wonder if they even had a choice.
Right.
Or if this whole drama was already set in motion by something, you know, bigger than themselves.
That's a question that theologians have been wrestling with for centuries.
Right.
Free will versus destiny.
Right.
But I think what's important for us as we delve into this story is to recognize the humanity of these characters.
Okay.
They're flawed. They make mistakes.
Right.
And they have to live with the consequences of their choices.
Okay.
Just like all of us.
And they're driven by those very relatable, very human emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Love, jealousy, ambition.
Oh, absolutely.
They're trying to protect their own, secure a future that feels safe. It's a reminder that even though this story takes place thousands of years ago,
right,
the themes still resonate with us today.
Oh, yeah.
We're still grappling with those same desires, those same fears, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And those emotions, combined with the cultural and religious context of the time, create this incredibly charged situation.
Right, yeah.
Imagine you live in a world where your name isn't just a label,
right,
but almost a destiny,
right,
woven into your very being.
Wow.
You see that a lot in Genesis.
Right.
The power of names.
You're right. Like Esau, whose name means hairy,
right,
symbolizes his more like primal earthly nature.
Yes.
And then there's Jacob, whose name means heel catcher or
right,
even supplanter, which kind of foreshadows his, you know, cunning and ambition.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Their names become almost prophetic.
Right.
And it emphasizes just how much weight words carried back then.
Mm.
Especially in ancient cultures, the spoken word held immense power,
mm,
especially in blessings and curses.
Yeah.
They weren't just words.
Right. They were believed to carry real spiritual weight.
Which makes that anti-blessing that Isaac gives to Esau even more chilling.
Tell me about it.
It's not just a family feud. He's basically cut off from the richness of the land.
Yeah.
And destined to, like, live by the sword.
It's a harsh reality.
Right.
And it underscores the very real consequences of Esau's choices.
Yeah.
But it also speaks to this larger theme of God's favor.
Okay.
And how it can shift from one generation to the next.
Right.
Remember, God promised Abraham that his descendants would inherit the land.
Right.
But those descendants weren't limited to just one son.
It's like God is always working through human history.
Yeah.
Sometimes in ways we might not expect.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And this story reminds us that God's plans are often far grander.
Right.
And more intricate.
Yeah.
Than our own limited understanding.
But that's true.
We might focus on the immediate drama, the sibling rivalry, the deception.
Right.
But beneath it all is this vast overarching narrative of covenant and promise.
Unfolding across generations.
And that's what's so amazing about the Bible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a collection of stories.
No.
It's a tapestry woven together with these recurring themes.
Okay.
These echoes of God's faithfulness, human fallibility.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this story in particular, has had a profound impact on religious traditions and beliefs.
Okay.
For instance, in Jewish tradition, Isaac's willingness to be sacrificed by his father, Abraham,
right,
is seen as the ultimate act of faith and obedience.
Oh, you're right. We haven't even touched on the binding of Isaac.
Right.
But it's a pivotal moment in his life.
Oh, yeah.
He's not just the son caught in the middle.
Right.
He's a man of profound faith.
Exactly.
Wow.
And it speaks to Isaac's own legacy of faith, even amidst the complexities of his life and his family.
It's incredible how these stories can be interpreted on so many levels. It makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
These stories, they're not just ancient history.
No, they're not.
They're like these vibrant threads woven into the fabric of our beliefs, shaping how we see the world, you know, and our place in it.
You got that right.
Yeah.
And one of the most fascinating aspects of this story, one that often gets overlooked, is the role of the women.
Oh, yeah.
The matriarchs.
Right.
They don't always get top billing,
mm-hmm,
but their influence in these narratives, it's undeniable.
You know, you're so right. Think about Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, Leah, these aren't just passive figures in the background.
Correct.
They are strong, determined women who shape the course of events, often in ways the men around them don't even see coming.
Absolutely. Take Rebecca, for example.
Right.
She receives the prophecy about Jacob being favored. And she doesn't just sit on that information.
No.
She takes action.
Right.
Even if it means going against her husband's wishes.
Right.
And let's face it, getting a little creative with her methods.
Dressing up Jacob as Esau.
I know.
Talk about thinking outside the box.
Right.
You have to admire her dedication to seeing that prophecy fulfilled.
Right.
Even if it meant, you know, taking some risks.
It definitely took guts.
Yeah.
But it also came at a cost.
Right.
Don't forget, she ends up sending her beloved son away.
Yeah.
Uncertain if she'll ever see him again.
Wow.
It's a poignant reminder that even when our intentions are good,
right,
our actions have consequences.
That's right.
Often rippling out to those we love most.
It's a sobering thought, but before we wrap up on too serious a note,
right,
something struck me as we were talking about Esau and Jacob, the food in this story.
Right.
We've got lentil stew. We've got that special dish Rebecca makes with game. It's making me hungry.
Chuckles.
What's your take on all the culinary details in this story?
Well, I'll admit, I tend to focus more on the theological implications than the culinary ones.
Right.
But you're right. Food plays such a significant role in these stories.
Right.
It's not just about sustenance.
Right.
It's symbolic.
Exactly.
Right.
It's about relationships, power dynamics, maybe even like spiritual nourishment.
Yeah.
Sharing a meal, especially back then, it was about so much more than just filling your stomach.
Oh, yeah.
It was about building bonds, showing hospitality, and reinforcing those social ties that held their world together.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It was their version of breaking bread.
Right.
Creating a space for connection and shared experience.
Right.
And when those meals are disrupted, like when Esau misses out on the blessing because he's late,
yeah,
it throws everything into chaos.
Like a divine dinner party gone wrong.
Laughing, perhaps.
Why?
But it highlights how important rituals and traditions were in their culture.
Right.
These weren't just empty gestures.
Right.
They were infused with meaning and significance.
Okay.
It's a good reminder that when we encounter these ancient texts, we have to remember the context.
Right.
What might seem strange or even shocking to us now was perfectly normal back then.
It's all about perspective, isn't it?
It is.
And speaking of perspective, this deep dive has given us a lot to chew on.
It has.
We've talked about the weight of inheritance, the power of blessings and curses, the complex dynamics of a family, you know, trying to navigate destiny.
Right.
But for our listener, what's the one thing you hope they take away from this exploration of Isaac's life and legacy?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I think more than anything, this story reminds us that even after thousands of years, these ancient stories still have the power to make us think differently.
Right.
To challenge us.
Right.
To help us see our own lives and relationships.
Yeah.
Even our faith.
Right.
In a new light.
They're not just tales from the past. They're mirrors reflecting our own humanity back at us.
Exactly.
Right.
And sometimes those reflections can be surprising.
Right.
And maybe a little unsettling.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think they point us towards a deeper understanding of ourselves and the God who is always at work, even when we least expect it.
Wow. What a powerful thought to end on. Thank you, expert speaker, for walking us through this family saga and shedding light on Isaac's enduring legacy.
My pleasure.
And to you, our listener, we hope you've enjoyed this deep dive into Isaac's story.
Yes.
It's a reminder that these ancient narratives are anything but irrelevant.
That's right.
They're filled with timeless wisdom, relatable struggles, and maybe even a little divine inspiration to guide us on our own journeys.
Absolutely.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep into the stories that shape our world.